Hello and welcome to Imp's WWE Adventures podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. You can help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review. You can also give a donation directly through Red Circle and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. Link is in the description. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network, One Nation Radio with Rich and James, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art with Chris Things, Trish and Sarah, and Tunnel Talk. My name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp, and this is your quick look back at the WWE week that was. 30 minutes, so we finished before the Bloodline promo was done. And what an awesome week it was. This is a great week for wrestling overall with AEW Revolution, living one hell of a final match for Sting. One hell of an amazing atmosphere for the show as well. Shout out to Floyd, who was there, the lucky bastard. Also, we're over in the WWE world, we're building up to WrestleMania. We're on a string of sellout shows for WWE, especially Monday Night Raw, where I think they're at like 3 to 4 straight sellouts. I think it's the same for Smackers as well. A straight run of shows for WWE where they're constantly just selling out. Momentum's at an absolute high. So with WWE with their hot run, AEW with their revamp, with their arrival of Ospreay, Okada and Mercedes Moné, all going to AEW to really revamp them, and WWE on their hot streak, selling out shows constantly on the road to WrestleMania. Is there a better time to be a wrestling fan? Just don't go on social media and end up in the us versus them Twitter wars. It's all right, I have a WWE podcast, and whenever I write about AEW and a TK shill who's on the TK money, it's fine. It's fine. You know, it's generally not possible to talk about one show without being called a shill for them. Internet fandom landscape is just weird. Anyway, with that said, let's jump on over to Glendale, Arizona for some Smackers.
But I need this one thing. Acknowledge me.
SmackDown from Arizona kicked things off with a 40-minute Bloodline promo, and that's exactly what I'm going to be kicking it off with. 40 minutes of Bloodline wah-wah. A segment that really helped sell the shift in perception for the Bloodline. The Bloodline grabbing hold of SmackDown for the longest segment this stable has had, with the crowd, the way they've turned on them, and the prestige, the most damage that it's ever been for the Bloodline. It's just a great way to highlight that juxtaposition. But they're taking hold of SmackDown with the firmest grip yet at their most damaged prestige and perception that the group has had. A really good way just to highlight that difference and make you feel it as a viewer. Rocky calls Glendale a crackden and then tells Cody no in relation to his one-on-one match, and issues a counter-offer for a WrestleMania Night 1 tag match, adding stipulations to the encounter. 1. Cody slash Seth win and the Bloodline are bottom ringside. 2. Rock Roman win and it's Bloodline rules. Anything goes. And me personally, I really like the idea of them just putting all of the walls in front of Cody to make it the biggest thing to climb over. Just put brick after brick, layer after layer for Cody to have to get over in this match. Right at the end, make it the most difficult boss fight you could. Someone posted a thread of all the most ridiculous Attitude Era stuff of interferences and all these over-the-top stuff galore. This overbooking it madness. And for me, I'm like, yeah, I want you to do all of this. Like, I know the thread was somewhat posted as a joke, but that is kind of, this is the match to do that in, though. All of the nonsense, overbook it to hell. Put the biggest wall possible in front of Cody and make him climb it. Have the Avengers assemble for Cody, somewhat similar to last year, but this time, like, really the Avengers assemble. And I'm all for that. I really like that idea. I like my wrestling to be different. If I want my 5-star match, I'll watch AEW. Like, Will Ospreay's arrived in AEW, and obviously I'm saying this as an Englishman, but he seems like an absolute megastar from the get-go. And the back-to-back matches he had with Takeshita and Carl Fletcher, both those are absolutely incredible. But like, if you want your 5-star incredible matches, like, you're getting served with them. In my whole wrestling landscape, I don't need every match to be like that. I'm perfectly fine for my Roman Reigns vs. Cody Rhodes match to be overbooked to hell. It's what I want. Give me what I want. Give me my crazy madness. I feel like it's the perfect way to cap off a long WWE reign in the most WWE way possible. How they would envision the toughest boss possibly to be. I would have the Bloodline win night one and set up night two. With, well, how is Cody going to get over this? I need to watch this. I need to see how it's done. Rocky officially bringing his board position slash power into the story, purposefully directing your mind to Triple H. No idea how Triple H is going to feed into the match, if Rock and Roman win night one, maybe that's a setup for something. Roman cutting off Rocky during the If You Smell. They've done the whole promo. We've been going for like 35 minutes at this point. I will say it didn't feel it. Of course, you got the long period of entrances and you had Roman and the Bloodline there for part one. Didn't really say a lot. Roman just played with the crowd and threatened to leave. And then they set up the Rock coming after the break. Then the Rock comes out and at this point you've killed like 10, 15 minutes. So already of this 40-minute segment, we're already down to 25. The rest of it, for me, absolutely flowed. It absolutely flew by. It's like you see a 40-minute promo on the books before you watch the show, you're only like, good God, oh no. Did you think back to the days of Randy Orton as champion in 2008, 2009, where every single show started with a really long promo by him? It's just like, oh God, no, please no. But that wasn't this. It absolutely flew by and set up so many different things. Cough, cough, for my review for Cody versus Seth, which basically summed down to watch SmackDown on Friday. He's like, no. This one actually set stuff up and gave something genuine for Cody and Seth to bite into a Monday Night Raw. Like, this is actually stuff set up. What they did with the ending, where The Rock is doing his ending the segment stuff, all of his spiel. He gets to the If You Smell. The camera zooms in and follows him down as he crouches, ready to then stand back up and lean, tilt his head back. But as he crouches down with the If You Smell, Roman cuts him off, a kind of brooding anger. Like, there's something on his mind which he cannot let go. Generating a holy shit chant from the crowd. The power struggle between these two at the top of the Bloodline brought to the forefront as he asks Rock to acknowledge him. He cannot let this go. He cannot move forward with the power dynamic and struggle between them. He needs to know that he is the tribal chief. And the Rock takes off his shades and says, Roman Reigns, my family, I acknowledge you as my tribal chief. This whole little bit here, just bringing that to the forefront of this thing, that like, yes, it works as a great kind of character note for Roman, but it also works as a shade cast for later. What happens after WrestleMania? Does The Rock forget this? As the Bloodlines music plays, Rock once again purposely extending his thumb into the shape of an L. Once again. Either that or it's guns up for the Bang Bang Gang. Like, you never know. You never know. Either way, it could be either or. But this segment seemed to do so many different things. It seemed to get us nice and primed for The Rock having his own agenda for joining the Bloodline, with the dynamic of the Bloodline having their prestige be the most damage it's ever done, and that's when they do this longest segment they've ever had, with the threat of Cody Rhodes. It's just setting up all of this stuff, purposely bringing in the board position and of The Rock into his character, which also purposely directs your mind to Triple H for, I'm assuming, for a reason. And of course, like the Roman Reigns little match just bubbling there. So I'm assuming they're going to do Roman versus Rock, maybe next year's WrestleMania. But they set up so much in this segment. So even though it was 40 minutes, even though it was only 25 of actual promo worth listening to, it was 25 minutes that set up a lot. Did The Rock need the 1 hour he was apparently trying to get? It's apparently he wanted more time, and that's when he cut the Instagram promo and posted it. Like, he felt he needed 1 hour to get across stuff, and I was like, no, that's ridiculous. You've got too many other things to set up. Like the Naomi versus Tiffany Stratton match, which came up next, they only had one segment to do their match when they were meant to apparently have another match go through an ad break. Like, nope, that then meant that it felt like more of a squash when then Naomi loses, just because they had their segment cut down. So that you already saw an active effect on one of the segments. And for me, it used all of that time just really well. In a way, somewhat trimmed down to what was necessary. Like, yes, I know I'm somebody who quite often sings about the praises of the matches themselves and the different production kind of things. It's literally just a bunch of lads standing in the ring talking for a bit. But you know what? That's fine. That's absolutely fine. You can do that. If you 2008, 2009 Randy Orton do this every week, then we're going to start having a problem. But, you know, a one-off on the road to WrestleMania being 40 minutes... I mean, it made me laugh where Cody Rhodes said, I'm not going to cut a 20-minute promo on you, as their promo started to rack up close to 20 minutes. I'm just like, you know, we're getting close, Cody. Get off your high horse. But yeah, so I was a big fan of this and all that it set up. When I get to the Raw side, like, I wasn't as impressed just because it didn't really give as much ammo for the other side to then respond with, whilst this was genuinely stuff being set up and the story moving forward, even though it's just a bunch of lads standing in the ring talking for a lot on a wrestling show. As for the rest of SmackDown, I might as well talk about the Naomi Stratton match just because I've already somewhat mentioned the problem that occurred with it. Well, because they had their time cut, it then means that Naomi's loss feels a quicker loss than it should have been, and that hurts Naomi more than the original plan apparently was. And the actual match that it happened sure caused a mini stir. Those Tiffy time chants are sure catching on. I mean, if they go out next week and just give them a bit more time to be a bit more competitive, I'm not a fan of 50-50 booking. I'm somebody where I'm like, there's no such thing as thing equals bad as long as you don't do it all of the time. You can do it once or twice. It's perfectly fine to do a bit of 50-50 booking in one feud on your entire show when you haven't really done it for months either. Like, that's absolutely fine. But when you start doing it on every single match because you don't know how else to continue a story, then we've got a problem. When you can predict the feud like an episode of House in terms of when's he going to solve the illness, then you've got a bit of a problem. Then you need to mix things up. And watching WWE before this Triple H era, it did become that with so many feuds. You could predict it. You could lay it out. You knew exactly when House was going to solve that illness. You knew it. It gets to that 35-minute mark and you just know. Anyway, other bigger women's division story of the night, though, was the quick turn for Dakota Kai, turning her back on Bayley pretty much immediately after aligning with her. Didn't even get a week. Says he's going to align with Bayley, and the very next week she turns on her, like, oh, great. The match was Kai and Bayley versus the Kabuki Warriors. Dakota jumping off the apron to leave poor tag team partner to fend for herself. It's a trap! And the Kabuki Warriors beat up Bayley. He just looks all sad. They got a bit of character establishing on Monday Night Raw. Kai is the spokesperson for the Kabuki Warriors. They have the group in their kind of official current form, which I think really helped them with their identity. Just a bit of character growth without the Bayley stuff there. You come back to SmackDown, they feel like a more established thing. I'll talk about that, like the similar dynamic with Jey Uso on a more long-term basis, just how much that's really helped him. Bron Breakker blitzing through the lads in impressive fashion, booking him as intensity personified, commentary putting him over as a lad built with the prototype of success. Paul Zarin Quinn finally found his way back onto television, only to get speared to oblivion after 3 seconds. Good to know he's still alive. Good to know he's still there. A lot of money being put behind Bron Breakker, a lot of stock being built behind him. All in like quick little background stuff during this WrestleMania run. And he's still getting a lot of his character stuff figured out on NXT with his tag team championship run with Baron Corbin, which I'll get to later. Carlito versus Santos Escobar in a street fight. What a fun, quick little romp this was. Getting your chair and trash can spots, just your typical WWE street fight fare. The crowd getting their we want tables chance in, the poor conditioned simpletons. All the stable lads out interfering and chasing away. When Lil Ray Ray returns, Rayturn Mysterio, faking with the crutches, like, oh, I'm coming out, but I'm all hurt, only to then wallop Bert and Angel. Apple, Backstabber, 619, slam through the table for the LWO victory, and the crowd all happy and cheery. Hooray! Which then brought to the main event, Randy Orton versus Austin Theory. Just two quick notes on this. Hell of a save by Theory to push himself off the turnbuckle when Randy Pandy slipped off during the superplex. Amazing save by Theory there. Secondly, both Theory and Waller with a hell of an RKO sell. I still find Theory Zebedee from the Magic Roundabout sell just so fun. Google Zebedee. If you don't know who Zebedee from the Magic Roundabout is, that is Theory's sell of the stunner. Absolutely love it. And quick notes in terms of like the rest of the show. Nick Aldis teased something for the tag team titles. Do we get a brand split off them? LA Knight teasing a chair with AJ Styles' name on it. Video packages reminding us of Logan Paul's shenanigans at Elimination Chamber ahead of Orton's main event. Just a little hint of what's likely to be happening with Orton. I think Logan Paul was advertised to be in the show next week as well. Still liking the cleaner production bits on these shows. Like some of the replays, just full screen with no fancy flashing overlay or anything. Just making it a lot cleaner. A big fan of that. Which is weird because I was also a fan of the more colour for AEW. But I like my shows to feel different. I don't want them to be the same. I don't want one show to do a thing and then like it and go, oh, all the shows should be like that. So no, I want them all to be different. Also worth noting that they're starting every telly show with an aerial shot of the WrestleMania Stadium in Philly before then transitioning to an outside shot of the venue for the night. Then we walk in with our rest. Some of the rest is going to be on the show. Then you have a promotional video, which then takes us into the arena. And notice it, something that I noticed the proper full order of whilst watching Elimination Chamber last week, and they really have started to use that for Raw and Smackers as well. It works so much better than just a cold open into the arena with our commentators immediately talking. Instead, we're walking into the arena at the start of each show. SmackDown, it was really only going to be remembered for the 40 minutes Bloodline promo at the start, but there was quite a bit to enjoy throughout the rest of the show. Anyway, let's take a quick breather and move on over to San Antonio, Texas for Monday Night Raw. And what was Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins' response to the 40-minute bit? They got 20 minutes themselves. What did they say? Did it come across as cool? Let's find out.
Yeah, Rocky does suck. And look, he ain't been The Rock for a long time. He damn sure hasn't been the people's champ for a long time. Mm-mm. So you know what? I think I'm just not going to call him these things anymore. I was thinking about it over the last week. I figured I'd come up with a new name for The Rock. Let me try this one on for size. I think I'm going to call The Rock... How about Diarrhea Dwayne? Jeez. Diarrhea Dwayne, he's been running his mouth, and every single thing that comes out of his mouth has the consistency of wet baby poop.
Oh, Seth. Seth. Monday Night Raw opened with Cody Rhodes. Nice to see the transition from the crowd learning to belt out the woe to now singing the entire first verse, leaning into it, really helping make him feel like a star. Crowd is just putting such a great job into really giving him that presence. Cody cleverly manipulating the crowd into chanting "We want Cody," positioning himself as the hero to vanquish the politicking baddie Rocky, which is exactly the correct response to do with what we were just talking about with the Bloodline, with The Rock bringing his bored position into the storyline, into his character, which I said makes you think about Triple H. But also, this is the absolute perfect setup for Cody to position himself as the hero against the politicizing guy who's playing politics. Like, it's perfect. So Cody's segment, the absolute perfect kind of bounce off of what happened on SmackDown without going like too far into something, because first he got to call out Seth Rollins and then he revealed the stuff together. He calls out Seth Rollins, who doesn't quite hit the same level with what we got with Cody. Not quite as strong. If he wrote this material, I feel so sorry for you, Seth. Some people calling it his suckering succotash moment. I read it more as it sends him almost back into Seth is not cool, kind of a bit lame territory a bit. Luckily, him tagging with Cody Rhodes and him being involved in this story is going to help. He's got so many strong characters around him that the focus on Seth isn't going to be as strong as it has been in the past. So when it was like the Fiend stuff, all of the attention and the hate fell onto Seth. All of that Seth is not cool stuff just fell directly onto him. Whilst this time you've got massive support for Cody Rhodes, you've got the incredible character of Drew McIntyre, like Jey Uso's got amazing support as well. But there's so many strong characters around Seth where it doesn't feel like all of the attention is going to fall on him. I feel like it's not going to have the same like reactions of Seth isn't cool, really. It's welcome to infamy, Sethy boy. Infamy. They've got it infamy. Yeah, their line was ironically just a bit shit. Follow up like a bad script for it as well. Like, hey, at least it got the crowd to chant diarrhea. We've got our priorities right. A crowd that would chant anything did indeed chant diarrhea. But like the rest of the promo did some great work progressing us more directly into the WrestleMania tag match, bouncing off what Rocky said on Instagram/Smackers and correcting the illusion of the man in power. Seth also announcing he'll be 100% cleared for WrestleMania. He and Cody agreeing to have each other's backs for the road. When Rocky's next on Smackers, Cody and Seth will be there to meet them face to face. So it was all setting up basically 20-minute segment where the main news was Seth Rollins announcing he's clear. But aside from that, it was watch SmackDown, which didn't need 20 minutes. It didn't need that long. No. We needed the Diarrhea Dwayne. We needed Seth Rollins saying that all the words out of The Rock's mouth sound like baby poop. It's like, no, it's not just a Diarrhea Dwayne thing that's bad. It's the follow-up too. The entire bit's bad. It's the kind of scripting stuff you'd hear about wrestlers running about backstage saying, I can't sound that. I'll sound stupid. Seth Rollins, you sounded stupid. You need to fight backstage so you don't come out saying stuff that just sounds this shit. Doing wonders to bring back that feeling of Seth Rollins is just a bit lame, isn't he? If anything, it does help position him definitely as the second behind Cody. Like, Cody, in this tag team, Seth is definitely the more lame one, and this promo really helped establish that. It's maybe not an essence that you meant to do. It's an essence they've created. They've put the work in. More to talk about that next week on the show, after we see Cody, Seth, Roman, and Rock have their stare down on SmackDown, which should be a bit exciting. You know, The Rock gets to rip into Seth for that crap line. So at least there's that. For the rest of the show, we've got Gunter versus Dominic. I would say that this Monday Night Raw had quite a strong air of, if you didn't watch it, you didn't really miss much. But if you did watch it, yeah, you know, it's fun enough. Gunter versus Dominic Mysterio. The poor innocent lad. What did Dom ever do to us? Poor innocent Dominic. Gunter smiling on his way to the ring is the scariest sight. I will say, that's what I mean by if you turn into this show, you did get some good things. You got Gunter smiling on his way to destroy Dominic. So at least there was that. The essence of "nice try, kid" as Gunter replies to Dom's chop attempts with proper welters. Gunter's so good, he can convince a crowd that even Dominic has a chance of scoring a pin on him. He is that good. But and also, that crowd relished the sight of the big lad destroying Mysterio in the end. A little bit of a house show feel, but a fun little bout. Nia Jax versus Becky Lynch bouncing off of last week pretty well. Nice to see, no killing time and going straight into the match this week. Nia's improved so damn much. A spot to kind of prove that in this one was she nailed a big leg drop off of Bert's rope and the crowd really bought it. The crowd's so behind Becky, they got so loud in the later portion of this match. But Liv Morgan caused the DQ, launching herself at Nia. A nice progression of Liv's logic becoming warped. Don't insert her into the title match though, like no need, just keep progressing this character nicely. A nice addition to Becky picking more fights than she really ought to with Ripley ahead of her in Philly, where she's now challenged Liv Morgan to a match next week, and Rhea Ripley just walks after in the shot afterwards, just shakes her head and walks away. It's like, yeah, you should be focused on Rhea Ripley. Instead, you're picking all of these different fights, having all these little scraps and being so desperate to prove yourself. And that's quite a little nice character beat that's been set up for Becky. Rhea Ripley was just in the background, just staying nice and relaxed, whilst Becky was just picking all of these different fights over there. Also, Adam Pearce in AVT announced the Intercontinental Championship Gauntlet for next week. Sami Zayn, Ricochet, Shinsuke Nakamura, Bronson Reed, JD McDonut, and Chad Gable in a six-man gauntlet match. Whenever I hear these announcers, like, oh, that's a good way to eat up an hour. That's good. Oof, thank God. In terms of this week's show, that's 1 hour fully taken up by that. That's why gauntlets are so great, where you have to come up with like 4 or 5 segments. Nah, the whole hour's gone now. You only need to do a 2-hour show now. Oh, it's safe, so much time. We also got Andrade's Raw return versus Apollo Crews. I'll talk more about the Intercontinental Championship like next week. It feels like a setup for Sami Zayn, but there isn't really a lot to feed on graps-wise. For like next week when we've seen it play out, will be when I go more depth into that. Yeah, Andrade's Raw return versus Apollo Crews, who's still alive. They kept calling it a debut. But I guess, you know, Andrade's original run was during the gas leak years, so like, can you call this a debut? Crews finally makes his Raw return as well, after getting called up back from NXT in the draft way back when. He did the whole thing where he stood up out of his chair, was like, yes, I'm coming to Raw, only to, like, you know, never a feature. You know, he got to be Andrade's dance partner here. The production order I thought had died with Dunn did show its head here, though. So this is where they got a little bit of critique. Andrade comes out, ad break, Adam Pearce's IC title announcement, then Crews comes out, and finally, 6 minutes later, the match begins. We got this all the time under Vince, where a wrestler would come out, then we'd go to an ad break, and we'd come back to something different entirely, then we'd have a video package about something, then finally the opponent would come out. I was just like, Jesus Christ. When a guy comes out for his match, don't be doing this. Just have the next guy come out. Stay focused. Just stay focused. Because basically what happens is what happened in this match, where at the start of this match, when the bell finally rang for Andrade versus Apollo, the crowd were pretty quiet and taken out of it. Well, yeah, Andrade came out ages ago, just been doing a bunch of other stuff. No wonder the crowd isn't the most excited and energy high for this now. Also, in terms of the match itself, obviously it's not been that long since I last saw Andrade wrestle, but nice to see him dance again under the WWE style. I do like the way that he offense feels under this style. I liked it under AEW as well. Running knee, setting up that DDT, now renamed the La Sombra, meaning the Shadow. His former name under CMLL. Adam Cole did some good setup there, for given the history of his character in CMLL, directly saying the name La Sombra, so that when he hits DDT at the end, you know what La Sombra means. Like, you know the significance to the character as well. Do I bring up Michael Cole and the Antlers thing? Do I bring that up? I think Dave Fenichel in our group chat just did ask, like, what's with Cole of the Antlers? And I think my response was, one day it just happened. It just happened one day. Then it was the thing. I have no idea where this came from. I cover this show, and when he started doing it at the Rumble, I was just like, I don't think this has ever been a bit. Michael Cole sold it so strongly that I'm thinking there's somebody backstage that finds it hilarious. The fact he gets so into it and sells it so strongly. Anyway, the main event was Jey Uso versus Drew McIntyre. Drew with a great interview promo beforehand, calling Seth a junkie, a spotlight junkie. The title deserves someone better than him. Jey Uso, he got his nice walking backstage, talking to camera one as well. The crowd desperate for Yeet, and when he put his glasses on, it said Yeet on it. The crowd, Jey Uso got like himself like an extra pop just by doing that. These two with yet another solid main event. This time, surely, they can actually have a proper dance without any of the outside interfering factors of past feuds. apart from this one, which also had the exact same problem. One day they'll have just a straight match with no interference. Jey Uso really has grown more and more into his role as a top solo star. Like, sure, he's still feuding with his brother Jimmy for the WrestleMania stuff, but switching him over to Raw really has given him the room to grow. Jey's character really has had that character growth, which makes the match with Jimmy Steele so much more special. Compared to if you've been on SmackDown and we've just been dancing around with this consistently, he's had an actual separation, a genuine break to grow and become something. Then his brother attacks. It makes it have so much more depth, just because Jey's character's had the room to grow. We've had time to attach to him, for him to really flesh out himself. It says the end, the back and forth final flow really cementing Jey as an equal to the number one contender himself, but he's too easily distracted by Jimmy, and it's no effort at all for Drew to score the win. It was piss easy. Jimmy just had to appear and exist. He didn't have to do anything. A great visual companion to the words said earlier in the show, when Rollins then charges out to the opportunity to clobber a member of the Bloodline, setting Drew McIntyre up to then fly in with the Claymore and deliver that message of focus. If you do not focus on me, I will beat you. But Drew McIntyre then starts getting angry at the existence of Seth Rollins. He's now fully convinced himself that he needs to defeat Seth for the good of the title and the brand. And we've watched that convincing slowly happen over the course of time. Not only can the character come out and tell us he's convinced himself, we've seen him do it. Anyway, that brings me to the end of Monday Night Raw, a solid episode of Monday Night Raw, if not one that really you miss anything if you don't watch. Almost like classic episode of NXT under Trips. It's one of those ones. You don't need to have seen this week's show, but if you did, you got some nice character development, and if you didn't, you didn't really miss a lot. Anyway, let's then move on to a special NXT. It's NXT Roadblock.
You gotta be kidding me!
This NXT Roadblock special kicked off with Dijak in a cage. Good choice. Dijak's tweet afterwards was saying that, to those saying, I shouldn't moonsault off a cage, you weren't T-Bar, barely breaking into main event, nervously checking his phone, waiting to be fired. Like, you know what? Good on you, lad. You've proven them wrong. T-Bar was from the mind of an out-of-touch crazy man, and Dijak has finally been giving the room to grow and prove himself. He did that as Dominik Dijakovic. That character did prove himself with his matches with Keith Lee. Seems weirdly, the Retribution group has ended up alright. They just had to get the hell away from Vince. Just get away from him. Dijak's had this room to grow in NXT, and, you know, his weird Batman-inspired stuff against Joe Gacy's weird, not really the Joker, but, you know, just WWE levels of crazy. I'll get into that in a second. But that moonsault that Dijak was talking about in his tweet, what an awesome moonsault that was. He's like 6'7", and he floated over perfectly, landed on Gracie perfectly. One hell of a talent is this guy. And I feel like he, you know, that void that, obviously it's the policeman kind of stuff with the baton, so he is reminding me a bit of Big Boss Man, in just because it's a gimmick similarity. But that vibe that Boss Man held on the main roster, it's that kind of area on the card. I feel it'll be absolutely perfect for this character. The guy that the heel would bring in to beat up your favourite, and he'd give them a good fight. Like, the tough bastard that they would have to get through, and it would never be an easy fight. Like, if they got through that, it would be a big task well done. I feel like the Dijak character would be perfect for that, for like that kind of level on the card. The guy could have a convincing title match, could easily win a mid-card championship, but he's perfectly happy being the hitman for the baddies. Like, the Dijak character is almost built for that in a way. But the more I watch Gacy, the more I'm convinced he's the perfect level of crazy for a crazy WWE character. Just their right level of cartoony. Straight jacket spots are right for this level of cartoony WWE crazy. So I guess it's something that's slowly finding itself, and I feel like all the little details are gradually coming together. I still don't know what I make of the camera turning upside down and the commentary going, oh, we're in the upside down. Because he's a strange thing. But they've got like a wibbly wobbly effect on the camera as well. So it's like somewhat a little bit warped when it turns upside down, just to add to that effect. When I watched that, my eyes just struggled to concentrate on it correctly. That's my main thing, is I don't know if it's just a me thing where my eyes just can't concentrate on the upside down shot. I somewhat struggle to focus. As in, like, you know when you feel your eyes physically struggling to focus? I get that with the upside down stuff with the Joe Gacy thing. Maybe that's just my thing that I can't deal with. Speaking of, like, cartoony stuff, a big door as Dijak dives into his PWG roots and a big table with a smile spray painted on it for Gacy. Dijak off the corner through the table, setting up a straight jacket swanton, which then leads to the one like negative note. Booker trying to sell this with his "this is serious" voice, as Dijak wraps duct tape around Gacy's face like, "I'm witnessing silly PWG spots. Don't be trying to sell me serious vibes on commentary." This is not what this match is. If this match is anything, it's not blood feud seriousness. Like, no, this is silly bollocks and you know it. You know it. Also, a bad day for those who called "Why Not Sell the Moves" after watching an out-of-context clip from AEW Evolution, as Joe Gacy immediately springs to his feet after a "Feast Your Eyes," blindly, because he's got duct tape around his face, jumping into another one, and then he loses. The fans were chanting, "This is crazy." It's like, you know what? Good for them. If they thought this was crazy, but you know what? Maybe it's fine for some people to stay in the bubble. This NXT crowd, you know what? If you found this crazy, maybe like the broader horizons, maybe they aren't for you. Maybe this level is, you know, crazy enough for you. You don't need to see stuff that's too crazy. It's all right. It's all right. Not everybody has to watch outside the blockbusters. Like, it's all right. It's fine. It's fine. It's absolutely fine. After that, we got a couple of tag team championship matches to talk about. First, the Wolf Dogs versus Chase U. Look what you could have had, Okada. Look at Chase U. Look what you could have had if you decided not to go to the other side. Chase doing a great job of making Ron Baker look awesome. The best way to describe Breaker's dive off the apron to Duke on the announce table is that it was a great advert for knee pads. Oh yes, he landed hard. As soon as Duke Hudson was down, the end for Chase U was nigh. End of days, tag, Breaker, yell, spear, a finish with oomph at the tag team champs. Feel like a big deal. And we're saying this is kind of like phase one of the tag division, chasing through everybody else that was set up last week. And on the women's side, it was the Kabuki Warriors versus Lyra, Valkyria, and Tatum Paxley. Decent match, nothing crazy. Gave us a nice little showing of the champion and her minion working well together. Miscommunication from Lyra as she accidentally spin kicked Paxley, leading to Asuka and Kairi quickly capitalising, but the segment finished, and the main kind of point of it in a way, a nice attack after the match, Roxanne Perez draping Valkyria's arm over the bottom turnbuckle hook, then bouncing off the bottom rope to stomp on down. Of course, it's Shawn Michaels NXT, and we got that awesome arm attack, which then means immediately comes out the structure, and because it's Shawn Michaels NXT, we get a lengthy, super duper serious, hushed tone ambulance sequence. Oh yay. It's too much. It goes from me being like invested in somewhere because the spot on the arm was cool to immediately like, no, this is too much. You don't need to do this much effort. It was all right. It was fine. You'd done it well. The main event was Carmelo Hayes versus Tony D'Angelo. Heel Melo is the best Melo. I love the character. The Don's biggest match as well. And the match itself was like a perfectly fine main event, flowing decently, but nothing crazy. Like, the match was somewhat bubbling but on hold until Trick's music plays, and this is kind of what the crowd's been waiting for the character beat for Melo. But it's a different kind of Trick. D'Angelo using the distraction to snap Melo into his vertical suplex into a cradle pin move. I don't know the name for his finisher, so I had to get nerdy. Vertical suplex into a cradle pin, and he gets the win. And the Trick music was a trick. It was a trick, it was a trap. Little additionals. The family got themselves a criminal lawyer in Luca, good for them. Confirmation that there will be no 10. Shawn Spears in his full chairman gimmick, walking out as a man with a chair. Good news, everyone. His promos are a bit wordy and rambly by design. Sol Ruka returned to help Blair Davenport lose. I've legit never watched her before, but you know, nailing the LGBT DDT off the barricade ain't a half bad first impression. And finally, no quarter catch crew. Dempsey got to celebrate his win with his daddy, whose title card read Mr. Regal, so you know, more formal. A nice little reminder of the heritage of the Heritage Cup. Oh, and after the crowd's reaction to Regal going fee-fi-fo-fum in response to his boys, "I'll do more for this than you ever did" line. Do Americans not know the fee-fi-fo-fum thing? Like, is that just a British thing? Like, it would make sense because it does end with "I smell the blood of an Englishman," but it didn't seem to get much reaction out of the NXT crowd. But you know, the NXT crowd are their own world, so do they like watch other things? But yeah, it was an NXT which, yes, it was a special in Roadblock, but it's more about building the special in Stand and Deliver in a few weeks ahead of WrestleMania. And it seems to set that all up nicely. We're going to Roxanne Perez with the beat her character has needed to really set her towards the championship. The Wolf Dogs, strong and powerful as they find out who their title match, their defense. Von Baker, obviously close to going to the main roster as well. Melo setting up his stuff with Trick. We've got Dandro defeating Kamala Harris so that he's the number one contender in his next biggest match against Ilya, which spells to me that Ilya's not moving on anytime soon, really, but they've got other names that have been called up on the main roster. They don't necessarily need it. So yeah, NXT bubbling under nicely. And that was the end of the week of WWE, and we're all set up again to once again watch a long Rock and Roman segment. Then he said Rock and Reggae segment this Friday on SmackDown. Yeah, if you want a Rock and Reggae segment, you can, you know, you don't have to watch SmackDown. Yeah, I thought it was a decent showing for WWE this week. Obviously, like, AEW had a full, like, strong refresh week and got me really excited for wrestling as well, because it felt like the wrestling is strong on all different sides of the circles. Those of us who love our five-star, crazy wrestling, we got our plate full this week, and we had our amazing retirement moment with Sting, which is such an awesome kind of atmosphere. Even just watching at home, never mind in the building. And then with WWE, they're on such an incredible, strong run of sellout shows with the audience in like retainment and investment so high on the road to WrestleMania. Difficult not to just call that a success as well. Wrestling overall for the two top companies in WWE and AEW, it's in such a strong place right now. And if you just sat there in the us versus them little wars, like, you're doing yourself such a disservice, because it's so strong all around. So enjoy it. Enjoy the road. Enjoy everything that's here. It's a great time to be a fan. Anyway, with that, I say thank you for listening, liking, engaging in any form, any manner. Always appreciate it. Never take it for granted. I'll be back this time next week. And with that, I bid you adieu. Adios.